cheating on tests by the nation's nuclear warriors, bribe-taking for military contracts in Iraq and Afghanistan. And now a nearly five-year sentence for a flag-ranked naval officer for steering contracts for ship provisioning in the infamous Fat Leonard scandal. Is corruption on the rise in the military? We asked criminal defense attorney Brian Bouffard, a former JAG staff member. Brian, good to have you back.
Thanks, Tom, for having me.
And so what's your sense of this? We have seen a lot of cases over the last couple of years of military corruption that they've gone after vigorously. Is it on the rise?
I don't necessarily think that it's on the rise, but I think that it's good that when it is coming to light, it's being dealt with and not kind of swept under the rug and ignored, or at least, you know, perhaps not as much as might have gone on in the past.
And in your experience, how often does it happen at the flag or officer or commander level versus lower level, you know, supply clerks and that kind of thing?
That's a real hard question to answer. And the reason is that usually these cases are not handled at the court martial level, and in fact, oftentimes they're not even necessarily handled as criminal cases at all, more administrative ethics violations and such. Obviously, the GDMA Fat Leonard scandal is a huge difference from that.
Yeah, because that one was the Justice Department, so jail sentence in I guess would be the same jail that anyone else would go to, as opposed to a military brig.
Yeah, absolutely. These folks being prosecuted and convicted in federal court are going to be going to federal prison.
And this sentence, which I think was 48 months, it was a really long, almost 4 or 5 years. Is that out of character? Were they throwing the book at him, or is that pretty much what you can expect in a case that grievous?
Well, it's really hard to say. Not trying to dodge the question, but just to kind of point out is that these type of high level prosecuted corruption cases are few and far between enough that we really don't have a good sense of what sentences are like for those, like we might have for a sexual assault case or a drug case or something like that that's more common. But here we have several cases arising out of a singular case involving not only a civilian but also a Singapore national, not even an American citizen. So he gets lured back here. He is prosecuted appropriately for what he did, and in the course of that prosecution, he flips on a lot of other people and gives them names. And so that's what we're seeing now with a lot of these dominoes starting to fall.
And so what can, I guess, even higher ups at the Pentagon level or the chief of staff, CNO level, is there anything they can look for? Any signs that might indicate this is a place that might be ripe for this kind of thing going on?
I don't want to say that they're necessarily pretty good at doing this, because a lot of times the government writ large tends to cast a very wide net in the hopes of catching everybody doing something wrong, and they end up catching quote unquote catching a lot of people who were just in the vicinity and really didn't do anything wrong. Tailhook is maybe one of those kind of examples, but in this case they're looking for patterns that are out of the ordinary, and patterns that might suggest an ethical violation, like staying in lavish hotel rooms. And certainly if you have information coming to your position that suggests that somebody is involved with having foreign nationals pay for prostitutes and things like that, I mean, there can't be a more big red flag than that.
What is the decision process by which the military decides whether to give something to the Justice Department to prosecute or whether they keep it as a court-martial?
In a situation like this, there's actually a memorandum of understanding between the DOD and the DOJ that has been around at least since the mid-80s, and it gives the Department of Justice primary responsibility for handling cases involving corruption and bribery of public officials, which Navy personnel and service members are in this case. So the purpose of it, and there's another huge purpose here, is that the kingpin of this, Leonard Francis, he is not only not a military member, but he's also not an American citizen. So in order to help coordinate the prosecution of him with the prosecution of American service members, it all needs to be kind of handled in one place. And the Department of Justice is a lot better and a lot more experienced in handling complex fraud investigations than the military would be.
In this case, do you think maybe the Navy lucked out a little because Singapore is one of the notoriously anti-corruption countries versus almost every country that surrounds them?
Lucked out in what sense?
In the sense that you would have a government on the counterpart government would be willing to cooperate in this case, because Singapore has very strict laws and they enforce them against any kind of public corruption.
Right, and I'm not sure to what extent the actual Singapore government has assisted in this, but I'm assuming that there has been some assistance. And you're right, you're going to get, you know, probably better assistance from them than from Malaysia or someplace like that. So, you know, all those things kind of come into play. But the fact that this is at the, you know, being handled by the U.S. attorney in San Diego and not the military is not surprising at all.
And do military officers, I know when you enter, you would get ethics training, or when you go to officer school, is this something that is refreshed throughout a career?
It is, and it's supposed to be. And, you know, particularly for people who travel overseas, certainly a lot of Navy personnel, people who interact with foreign governments and foreign officials, you know, and even just foreign citizens. I mean, they're always on the lookout for whether or not, you know, even accepting a minor gift could be innocuous, or it could be the, you know, a sign of something more serious. And so they do try to prohibit that type of thing as much as they can.
And I guess sometimes in joint exercises or military attaché types of visits where you have officers meeting officers, do they do exchange of state gifts, for lack of a better word, where, you know, in our case, say the president gets a gift, it gets turned over to the GSA for storage. They don't take it home when they leave the White House, this kind of thing. Same protocols in the military?
Similar protocols, yes. You know, we don't want to be in the position of offending, you know, our partners and our guests over there, but at the same time, we don't want, you know, there to even be the appearance of impropriety for exactly the reason that we're seeing here in the GDMA cases.
So that ceremonial sword gift could hang in the captain's office even when the captain changes hands of a ship?
Potentially. I mean, the issue is you don't accept it, or if you do accept it, you accept it and, you know, immediately turn it over to the proper channels, you know, within the government, so that nobody can say that, you know, you as a person were accepting a gift to, you know, in your capacity as you as a military officer, or, you know, a flag officer or a general officer in particular.
All right. So getting back to this case of Navy Captain Daniel Dusick, who was sentenced just last week for selling access to the information about ship movement. Is this one of the worst that you've seen? I mean, is this pretty much as bad as it gets?
Well,
short of murder,
certainly the, you know, if we were at war with a naval power, you know, ship schedules might be more important. But you can look at what happened just with the USS Cole bombing, and it doesn't take, you know, a lot to understand that giving any kind of classified information about where our ships and where our servicemen and women are going to be at any particular time, I mean, that's a huge operational security problem. So hopefully nothing happens, but when something like this goes down and the wrong people get this information, I mean, we live in a world where that can be incredibly dangerous. And so I'm glad that the government is taking this as seriously as they are.
Brian Bouffard is a criminal defense attorney in Texas and former JAG. Thanks so much for joining me.
Tom, thank you.
Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click share with friends.